Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Stepping on the cat in the studio.
No, that wasn't him.
Yo, get up.
I'm waiting for a Homer.
Oh, that's definitely not it. All right, John, on the other side, brother.
Right, mate.
All right, and in closing, here's the late, great Lowell George reminding you to... No, that's the intro.
This is a top to a, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11,
and amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366, or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. The ranting, hip-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody. Welcome aboard Foxed Up. We might actually get through an entire week of shows here. Well, miracles never cease. Welcome aboard, everybody. I tell you, that was one hell of a horn section, even though it was just Bob and I. But I really, really enjoyed picking apart the situation with this song, Bill O'Reilly, you know, the East Coast Avengers thing, all that. And I'll see what I can do about getting the Avengers onto the network. And I think it might be fun not to have them on my show, but more to have them maybe on the horn section and let Bob and I continue the conversation. Because I do think, you know, I don't have the final opinion on this. Nobody's got the final opinion on any of this. It's a really difficult thing to, you know, balance out and work out in your head, because, you know, we do take a non-violent stance to our lives on this side of the political divide. But, you know, there's been a lot of violence pointed at us for a long time. And a lot of it has been more than figurative. And so then you end up with a song that comes up with figurative violence towards someone who has been it's just so god-awful and inhuman as Bill O'Reilly. My sympathy just doesn't really, you know, it just doesn't play. Be interesting to talk to them, because, I mean, this is one of those things. Music needs to take risk. Art needs to be risky, or else it's just boring. It doesn't go anywhere. And so if it makes some people uncomfortable, it probably means that it's doing what it was intended to do and make people think a little bit. Now, we know that the people that are getting the most upset about this won't think about the nuances Bob so beautifully mentioned. But it's interesting. We're going to move on from that for the program, though. If you haven't read this piece, you need to go to Alternate and just search for anti-intellectualism. And you got to find this piece. Now, I'm going to get into it in a bit here, but we've got some music to get to first. And I think it was actually David from Maine and I were talking about something last week, and I was trying to tell something about an Australian band who I could not remember. Well, I remembered who the hell they were. I don't remember what point I was trying to make in the conversation, but since I remembered which band I was trying to think of then, I thought I might play them today. Now, I played one of these tracks before, and got to be one of my favorite band names ever. Australian band by the name of Boom Crash Opera. I still think it's one of the greatest just band names I've ever heard. In fact, one of the weathermen here in Sydney, you know, uses that name actually. Must have been a fan every time that there are thunderstorms scheduled around here, and he goes, "We're gonna have a little bit of the Boom Crash Opera tonight." And but now you'll hear some of the production. You'll hear that this is kind of 80s. My good friend Scott, Mr. B1 Louder himself, tour managed this band back in their heyday in the late 80s. Some really good guitars, nice rhythms, really great vocals, it was an interesting band. And Scott always said he reckons they're still probably one of his standout favorite all-time Australian bands. he toured with them on and off for years and just said their shows were fantastic. The sound was always really, really good, probably because Scott had something to do with that. And just a really great band. And it's, I don't know, it has some of the aspects of, you know, where the Tea Party might come from, but not quite as out there. Big drums, lots of guitars. And these guys did really big guns in their heyday here in Australia. Lots of sales, lots of tours, and lots of hits. So now I'm sitting there looking. I've got three of them here. Where should I start? I think I might start with the opening track of this album, and the album that this is off of is, I believe, Look Listen. And the opening track is a track called Onion Skin. And, you know, there's nothing political about this or anything else. This is just a really, really good rock band, I reckon. And so without further ado, Boom Crash Opera and Onion Skin. Roll it, Bob.
Boom. Garage. Hop it out.
Stop.
It's a big noise. It's a big noise. Boom Crash Opera with Onion Skin. I do like that line, you know, these are crazy times. And boy, do we live in absolutely the most crazy times. We're going to go to the phones. You know, all I have to do is play music, and we end up with a good friend, David from Maine, who I mentioned before. We got him on the line. How you going, David? Welcome to the program.
Well, John, I do have to say, I recognize that song. That was a top 40 hit, wasn't it? It had to be, because I think I remember hearing it on Casey Kasem's top 40 when I used to listen to the radio.
Yeah, they did have some U.S. success. They did.
That was probably like number 39 or something.
Yeah, it probably was. I've got another one that I'll play later that was huge here, and I've played it before on the program called The Best Thing. And that if you recognized Onion Skin, I would think it's the same record. I would have thought that this other one probably would have done even better. It's a real kind of up kind of tune. But yeah, they're a great band, and my mate Scott said, you know, probably one of the best bands he ever got to tour with, you know. And I mean, he's toured with you know, it kind of separating out the George Bensons and the huge legends that he's worked with. But when it comes down to, you know, the slightly more working class area of band, he reckons they were one of the most talented he ever worked with.
Mm. Well, before I get into what I was called about, which was the East Coast Avengers, I was going to mention that song. You beat me to the punch, finally, John. You beat me to that. Well, you deserve it, man. You deserve it. I sat on it. I procrastinated. That's what you get when you procrastinate.
Oh, don't I know that?
I'm going to give you a little bit of tragedy, then we'll go to a triumphant story that I think needs to be told. But first, tragedy.
Okay.
Dave Matthews, sax player, passed away today. Leroy Moore.
He wasn't very on in years, was he?
No. This stemmed from a this goes from a lot of different issues, you know, for health care for musicians, but this stemmed from an all-terrain vehicle that happened back in June.
Oh.
And I guess they did not have the right, I guess it stemmed from those injuries, and I guess I'll just leave it at that. But a great sax player. I always enjoyed his work with Dave Matthews, and I thought he added something integral to the band with a violin. Mm. You know, that's all I can say about it.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for Dave Matthews, and I think he's an amazing guitar player. I don't follow them that closely, and it's you probably run into this. Do you have bands that you feel like you should be really, really fanatical about but aren't, but yet respect what they do?
Yeah, that's the way I feel about Dave Matthews.
Yeah, you know, there's his old guitar teacher that he goes out and does duo gigs with from time to time. We'll go and do little theater things.
Uh-huh.
That I've heard some of that stuff. And that, for some reason, and I can't explain why, is more compelling to me than the full-on band. Even though I watch live footage of the band, I go, bloody hell, these guys are good. I love his drummer. I love his bass player.
You know, but speaking of Bob's thing with Funky Town, I mean, I had a nightmare listening to, I mean, this is, you know, this doesn't really respect Leroy Moore's funeral death or anything, but it's the truth. I remember listening to Crash over and over again because I worked at a music store. And oh, my Lord, I never want to hear that album again. Same thing as No Doubt. I put that up there with No Doubt's Tragic Kingdom. Oh, my God, if I hear those albums again, I'll do a shootout in a convenience store, no question.
Yeah, and when that album came, that particular album came out, I thought it was a really, really good record. But it got so played to death that you just end up being like, you know, I'm over it. I'm really over it.
Right. Here's the thing. I thought they were cool when they were playing What Would You Say and Under the Table and Dreaming. They didn't have a video out at that time. They weren't on MTV constantly. But when Crash came out, it was like supermarkets, malls, it was everywhere. You couldn't escape it. Every time, I'm serious now. 2 or 3 months do not fail me every time I go into a supermarket. And I'm only in there for 15 minutes, so figure this kind of mathematics out in your head. I'm only in there for 15 minutes, but somehow, somewhere, Crash will always appear.
It's like the vegetable shop that we go to, and someone there's someone who painfully has to do the Elvis mix, and it's
you
just
know,
like, ah.
You know, this is going to be a hard one for that band to overcome, because it wasn't like he was a session player. He was integral. It would be like the violin player dying, or the bassist, Stefan, who I have. Holy shit. I mean, you know him. You've seen him on TV, the bassist, Stefan. The guy's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, R.I.P. to Leroy Moore. Same with the Isaac Hayes and Bernie Mac. And here's some triumph for you, which I thought is awesomeness. Burning Spear, one of the famous Jamaican reggae icons.
Oh, yeah.
Finally, after an exhaustive court case, won his entire catalog after 37 years.
No way!
In the music business, yes.
Oh, awesome.
And
that is huge.
Yes, yes, yes. And what's great about it is the attorneys that were on his side, they didn't ask for a retainer. They just said, I want to do this because I believe in what you're trying to accomplish. They met the family, and apparently, you know, I don't know, maybe prayer works in some cases for someone like Burning Spear, because he has a tremendous blog post, which I put at the site where I write at fudgefm.com. You can check it out. And I put it, separated because it wasn't in paragraphs, so I put it in paragraph form. And I think it's just a touching statement. So people, that's such an awesome that's such an awesome win for musicians everywhere. The whole damn catalog is his.
That is almost unheard of.
I know it is. I mean, you know, this happened with Robert Fripp, and this happened with David Bowie, but very rarely.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially
you know,
with
I mean,
black musicians.
Yeah, I'm rather shocked, to be perfectly honest. You know, because the classic example is Fogerty. You know.
Yeah.
And he still has never gotten the Creedence catalog back, and still, you know, for the entire history of Who'll Stop the Rain and all those tracks,
right?
He's never seen a penny, and he was smart enough, or got the shits enough, that when he finally realized that they owned anything he ever put pen to paper with, whether recorded it or not, for a certain period of time, he just stopped playing, period. And then he waited until it was all over, and then relaunched his career with Center Field, and didn't actually put any of that down to paper until after that clause was over. And this has happened time and time again in music, and it will continue to happen, as long as the major label system's in play. And to hear that someone like Burning Spear, and I mean, that is no insignificant catalog.
No, that isn't. That's a legendary catalog, not without question. I mean, I'll just put it to the people who may not know his work, like I do. I'm not really familiar with his work, but I know you can hear it in the work of Michael Franti and people
oh,
like
yeah.
that.
Well, my missus is a huge reggae fan. When she and her ex were running a pub in Brighton, the jukebox was nothing but reggae 45s. And so, you know, I have plenty of Burning Spear here. I will take care of that tomorrow. I've got it. Between Gail and Scott, I actually have a hell of a lot of reggae.
you know, John, you might want to read the statement over the air that he wrote, because it is kind of touching, and I think a lot of musicians and a lot of artists will connect with it. I mean, he fought for 37 years, people. 37 years to get it all on his own.
That's 2 years short of my lifetime the guy's been fighting.
Right. So,
I mean,
I just,
that's... I will read the statement. I'll grab some Burning Spear for tomorrow, and we'll play some tomorrow. The statement's at his website, at his...
Yeah, it's at his website, right. But I made it easier for people because he didn't put it in paragraph form, so I took it and I put it on my site at fudgefm.com.
Okay.
If you go there on the front page, you can see it. And it's just easier to read because, I mean, sometimes artists don't do things in paragraph form. They don't understand that a lot of people, I don't know, it's some people just won't read things in paragraph form, so I just made it easier for people.
Right on, right on. I will get some music together on that. I've got the page up here, but I'm going to hang on to that till tomorrow because I do have some things that I want to cover tonight. But I think that's fantastic. I can't wait to read it because I just think that is massive because the guy is an absolute icon.
I agree with you. And about the East Coast Avengers thing, I can just say this. I believe that the band knew what they were getting into when you label a song Kill Bill O'Reilly.
Oh, yeah.
If you checked out what their album is called out in October, they're getting into that arena. And when you get into that arena, to me, when you name a song like Kill Bill O'Reilly and you put Michelle Malkin's name in it, you give them power in that respect. And it made me question, like, how many people really rap about Michelle Malkin? And she had left the show, so I don't know. I mean...
But I mean, when you know, they could have written the lyric a year ago when she was still part of it, and she's still part of the Fox News thing. She's still part of that mouthpiece, you know. And she is just as hateful a person as Bill O'Reilly is, if not more. I find certain things about her absolutely just appalling. The idea of someone of the background that she has, and I've heard her say that the Chinese internment camps were a good idea. That just absolutely crushes my little brain, and I cannot handle that kind of concept. You know, it's the ultimate. You know, it's like chickens lobbying for Colonel Sanders.
Yeah. You know the name of the album, right? That's going to be out in October.
Prison Planet.
Yeah.
And Alex Jones is actually in their top friends at their MySpace.
Right.
And I know Alex Jones is a controversial son of a bitch. I know he is. And I have my reservations about him in a lot of ways. However, again, it's that thing. It's always the seeming lunatics are the ones that are out in the forefront on an issue first,
right,
and then the rest of the people catch on. And I'm not saying that he's got all the answers or got all the answers right. I'm in the midst of writing a song right now that is it's actually written. I'm in the midst of producing it now that probably could be found to be similar. Right? Not the subject matter, but I'm writing about the concept of, you know, could 9/11 have been a false flag attack? Now, I'm not saying that I believe that or I know any of that.
Yeah.
But there's a whole lot that we don't know. We have the American history of pulling crap like that before. And, yeah, I will post the lyric. It will have keywords in it that will attract attention. But that is not my initial purpose for doing it.
Right.
I have an idea that I want to convey.
Well, I can just say that you were probably the spearhead of that genre, thrasher, truth or folk.
Well, you know, I would think, and I have issues, you know, the Ron Paulites will probably grab right onto it. But I do think that there is place for a discussion that, you know, with everything that has happened in America since that event and the way that we were lied into Iraq, you know, all the things that have happened, there are so many unanswered questions
around
the situation that I mean, I don't have any answers. And this is the thing, you know, you tread really, really thin ice when you start talking about this.
Yeah.
But my basis is the 9/11 Commission was a farce. Even Keane and the other dude have come out and said that their hands were tied. You know, Bush and Cheney not under oath testifying together. You know, just from what we know about how investigations are done and things like that when it comes to the law, none of that protocol was followed. So how can we trust what we're being told about the summation?
My philosophy is if it didn't happen, it will happen now. That's the way I look at things regarding a situation like that. It's bound to happen. I mean, if it doesn't happen, I mean, just look out for it and see and watch for the future. The last thing I wanted to mention was this thing with, I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's on velvetrevolution.us.
Mm-hmm.
About the new information on Karl Rove and...
Are you talking about the Ohio lawsuit?
Yes.
The voting machines and then the threats against the GOP IT guy.
Yes.
Who, if he talks, they are threatening his wife, just like the Valerie Plame Wilson incident.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh yeah. I've been screaming about this ever since that broke. You know, it was Velvet Revolution and Brad Blog really jumped on this. You know, because certain folks that want to, you know, just brush this crap away say, oh, you know, but it hasn't been substantiated yet. Excuse me, the guy, the attorney for this Republican who wants to talk is applying for witness protection for his client. He would not do that unless he had cause.
Oh, I agree.
I think that there's something there. We actually just saw last night on television here a massive discussion about the torture memos and the fact that, you know, and the hearings that are going on at the moment and the fact that the Bush-Cheney administration, including Rumsfeld and the rest of them, approved all this illegal, you know, advanced, you know, enhanced interrogation technique crap. And they are liable for war crimes. I see cracks in the foundation finally starting to form. The media might not be reporting it like they should, but where you look, you find, you know, there's these two cases that are going on in Ohio, which I think are massive. The IT. Have you watched all those videos on Velvet Revolution?
I have not watched the videos. I've just...
Oh, you must. Because they, in this conference call... They actually have the IT guy that they have hired who has done the actual connecting of the dots. And it is intense.
Well, I'm definitely gonna check that out, and I'm going to let you get to your other stories. But as always, John, it's been cool talking to you, and I look forward to hearing your Burning Spear blog tomorrow.
Yeah. We'll definitely do that tomorrow. And thanks for that. And we'll speak to you very soon, as we always do.
All right, John.
All right. Take care, David. David from Maine, pop culture correspondent to the Head On Radio Network. While I get it together here, let's go back and play another track. Now, this one I've played before, and I'll play this because I'm not sure we'll actually get through all three before the end of the show, just because I do want to cover some of this article. But I played this one before. I think that this was this may have made it to the States as well, and I was really glad to hear David say, I remember that. it all doesn't get lost down a black hole every time. But off of the same record, and this is just a great pop rock song, the best thing. Boom Crash Opera, roll it, Bob.
Gravitation pull gets stronger. My skin it feels the way my brains are on a blaze. The weakest feeling here is bliss.
Great song. And a few years back, Scott and I were entertaining the idea of getting a musical project together, which unfortunately didn't quite see the light of day, but one of the requests that he had was that we had to cover that song if we ever got it to the stage. And, you know, I think it would have been great. But moving on, Gail sent me this alternate piece a few days ago, and I'm still trying to figure out a way to email this to, like, my conservative family members and somehow buffer it in a way of explaining, you know. Like, I had one of my family members just come out, you know, it was such a Fox type of statement going, you know, so do you hate America? And I just, you know, on the other side of the phone I'm going, and, you know, you don't know how to respond to this stuff. And, you know, and it's just like, no, I don't hate my country of birth. But I do really, really, really fucking hate what has become of it. And this plays to that. and it says, sad but true, intelligence is a political liability in the U.S. Author of The Age of American Unreason, Susan Jacoby explains why. I want to read this book. It's like these guys take pride in being ignorant. Barack Obama finally said it. Got to give Obama credit for having a rather steel set when it comes to a few things. Like I said, I got my problems with some issues, the centrist thing, all that. But I've never heard someone make that statement. And it's something that the American people need to hear. they open up here saying, through a successful political and electoral strategy, the right's stand against intelligence has steered them far off course, leaving them and us unable to deal successfully with the complex and dynamic circumstances we face as a nation and as a society. American 15-year-olds rank 24th out of 29 countries in math literacy, and their parents are as likely to believe in flying saucers as in evolution. Roughly 30 to 40% believe in each. Their president believes the jury is still out on evolution. Steve Colbert interviewed Georgia Rep. Lynn Westmoreland on the Colbert Report. Westmoreland co-sponsored a bill that would require the display of the Ten Commandments in both the House of Representatives and the Senate, but when asked, couldn't actually list the commandments. This stuff would be funny if it weren't so dangerous. In the 2004 election, nearly 70% of Bush supporters believed the United States had clear evidence that Saddam Hussein was working closely with al-Qaeda. A third believed weapons of mass destruction were found in Iraq, and more than a third that a substantial majority of world opinion supported the U.S.-led invasion. According to the Program on International Policy Attitudes at the University of Maryland, the political right and the allied culture warriors actively ignore evidence and encourage misinformation. To motivate their followers, they label intelligent and informed as elite, implying that ignorance is somehow both valuable and under attack. Susan Jacoby confronts our know-nothingism, current and historical, in her new book, The Age of American Unreason. A former reporter for The Washington Post and program director of the Center for Inquiry, New York City, Jacoby is the author of five books, including Wild Justice, a Pulitzer Prize finalist, and Free Thinkers, A History of American Secularism. Her political blog, The Secularist Corner, is at The Washington Post, blah, 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 blah. Have things gotten worse? How were things different as you were growing up? Susan Jacoby, well, I have just been told that all my memories of growing up are wrong because memory is absolutely inaccurate. It's only a narrative. I'll give you an example of how stupid this country has become. I'm one of the Village Atheists on Faith, a panel sponsored by the Washington Post and Newsweek. In a recent post, I wrote that when I was 7 years old, I was taken by my mom to visit a friend who had been stricken by polio and was in an iron lung. Polio has basically been eradicated, but I grew up when polio was still a real threat to children before the Salk vaccine. This childhood friend had been playing and running only 3 weeks before, and now he was in an iron lung. And I asked my mom, why would God let something like this like that happen? And to her credit, instead of giving me some moronic answer, my mother said, I don't know. After posting this on Faith, I received an email saying, all childhood memories are unreliable. We construct narratives to justify what we now think. Of course, it would be stupid if I said I became an atheist at the age of 7, but I hadn't said that, only that I remembered this childhood experience as making me begin to question what I'd been taught. The whole tone of the email was that nobody's memory about anything could possibly be accurate. No fact could possibly be true. Then she's asked, that doesn't sound like a typical evolution doubter. It sounds like an attack on rationality from a rational person. Now, the piece is actually by Terrence McNally. And she answers, that's right. One of our points I make in the book is that unreason pervades our culture. It's not just a matter of right-wing religious fundamentalism. There are all kinds of unreason and suspicion of evidence on both the right and the left. Terrence, misinformation may well have been a deciding factor in a close election of 2004. I worry not just about the lack of information and knowledge, but also the active disparagement of those who would even care about such things. Contempt for fact is very important, she says. I'll give you a great example that's already obsolete. At the end of the primaries, both Hillary Clinton and John McCain endorsed a gas tax holiday for Americans this summer. Every economist, both liberal and conservative, and this would do nothing to help matters. And when Hillary Clinton was asked by the late Tim Russert, can you produce one economist to support the gas tax holiday? She said, oh, that's elite thinking. Okay, so this is not just something that comes from the right. Well, I don't necessarily consider Hillary Clinton left, but that's a whole other discussion. But see, it's this idea of, you know, if you bring a fact to someone's attention, the American reaction these days, if you don't agree with it, you go, oh, that's just an elitist opinion. And you're going, but it's a fact! I've got the proof right here! And so for that family member of mine who unthinkingly asked me the most asinine question, do I hate America? It's like, no. I'm sick and tired of the fact that even my own family has succumbed to this fucking stupidity crap. And no matter how much you try and show them going, no, the sky is really blue. It's fucking blue. And you get nothing. You get squat. You get, you're a lunatic. You're crazy. And I'll tell you, this stuff drives me absolutely batshit crazy. I can't stand it. It's amazing. But, you know, these people drive me nuts. I can't even, you know, this concept of how you can show people right to their face reality, and then all they have to do is say, that's elitist, right? Some of that code word crap. You know, you hear things from people where they say, you know, you say, you know, the Supreme Court put George Bush in office in the year 2000. We have proof. You're an elitist. You're just an angry liberal. Get over it. No, actually, fuck you. I'm not going to get over it because the truth is the truth, and I'm going to keep screaming it from the rooftops until it gets through your thick ass head. I'm telling you, this piece really, really got up my skin because it's so describes what I see has happened to the United States. Even my own family. And if any of them are listening, I'm sorry, but it's true. And some people in my family are so racist, it doesn't matter how bad these Republican idiots fuck things up, they'll continue to vote for them because, God damn it, they're a white man. I'm so stupid, I can only vote for someone of my own color. All right. They continue on. Now, to say that economists have nothing intelligent to say about whether a gas tax will give people economic relief is like saying that you don't ask musicians about music. You don't ask scientists about science. It's not just an attack on a political idea, it's an attack on knowledge itself. Terrence then says, and this is from a woman who was in the top of her class at Yale Law School. Susan says, of course, she doesn't believe it for a minute. It shows that a lot of politicians think that they have to play to ignorance and label anything that goes against received opinion as elitism. You know, let's talk about the real elitism. Some, you know, money-grubbing little shit like John McCain, who dumps his first wife because she had an accident, marries a beer baron, now has, what, 5-6 different fucking homes all over the planet? Or all over the United States, because for those people, the whole planet is the United States. You know, Europe, Asia, Australia and Africa are all afterthoughts. I'm telling you, this piece it just awakened everything that frustrates me so. Because if we didn't play to the stupidity. And we do. This is what's been happening for years. Dumb them down, dumb them down, dumb them down, keep them busy. I mean, this just completely screams Idiocracy. Go away, Biden. I'm waiting, you know, 50 years, that's what it's going to be. Rednecks in front of huge screens, sitting there being fed stuff so they can sit there and masturbate. Well, they think the whole place is just going fine because they've got their consuming goods. I'm going to scan down. Terrence says, I recall the book The Soundbite Society by Jeffrey Schuer in 2000 said that television inherently prefers simplistic arguments, simple solutions, simple answers. Susan replies, as we're talking, I happen to have my computer on. News stories are flashing on and off the screen. If they're on for 2 seconds, you're going to miss a lot. And that's a problem with video culture as translated through computers. Terrence, having all the information at your fingertips is a plus. What's the negative? Well, I love that I don't have to go through half a dozen books to find a date that I've forgotten. The ability to get quick information is great. But if you don't have a framework of knowledge in which to fit that information, it means nothing. I give you an example. In my talks to people, I often mention statistics from the National Construction Center that almost half of Americans can't name even one of the rights guaranteed by the First Amendment. Are you hearing that? Can't even, you know, I claim First Amendment rights. Well, what's that? Scheming, I can masturbate. sorry. This frustrates me so. You know, and this is how we end up getting divided so easily. Because we don't have a working framework for all this information that we've got. Or at least many of us don't. Bob says, First Amendment? Ain't that what gives us the right to bear arms bears? that would be about right. Says, I'll give you an example. In my talks to people after can't even name the First Amendment, blah, blah, blah. A student stood up at a university in California and said, that doesn't matter because you can just look it up on the internet. But if you don't know what the First Amendment is in the first place, you don't know what the question to ask the web. Garbage in, garbage out. The web's only as good as our ability to ask questions of it. The ability to access information means nothing if you don't have an educated framework of knowledge to fit it into. And Terrence says, why America? Other countries have television and the internet. The network of infotainment has no national boundaries. It's all over the world, but there are a couple of things that make America particularly susceptible. A fundamentalist, this is brilliant, a fundamentalist is one who believes in a literal interpretation of sacred books, and a third of Americans believe a literal interpretation of the Bible. That's about 10 times more than any other developed country in the world. It's entirely possible to be a religious believer and to accept science. But not if you're a literal religious believer. You can't believe that the world was literally created in 6 days and be open to modern knowledge. There's also something else. We've always had more faith in technology than other countries. One of our problems with computers is that we believe in technological solutions to what are essentially non-technological problems, not knowing a non-technological problem. This idea that the web is an answer to knowing nothing is wrong. But it's something that Americans, with our history of believing in technology and the solution of everything, are particularly susceptible to. And, you know, and where this really frustrates me, you know, because I had this huge, I've said this before, I had a huge wake-up call when I finally moved away from the United States and I went and I spent time in Germany. And when I first arrived there, I was a chest-beating, fuck, we're the best thing that ever happened to this planet and the world, and no one can tell us what to do because we fucking own everybody's ass. Boy, did I get shot down quick. Once you get out of the bubble. And, you know, they talk about the mass scores and whatnot at the beginning of the article, but yet, you'll still have people going, we got the best education system in the planet. But we don't. We don't. And so if you cannot accept the reality and the fact that our education system is failing our kids, you can't honestly make changes in which to make it better. Because you're denying the reality that it's fucked up in the first place. And I for anyone with sensitive ears out there, I'm sorry. I've got sailor mouth tonight, but you know what? Sometimes I just gotta let it go, or else I got caught up in trying to just edit myself. And I refuse to edit myself when talking about this. Yeah. My neighbor in the chat room going, breathe, calm, relax, breathe. Thanks, Juggle. You know, I mean, I know I'm loose-lipped when it comes to language. I mean, that's just part of who I am. That's part of what I've been. I mean, I spent years and years and years on the road with working with really, really, really tough, hard-ass people. And that's just the language. It's all just words in my mind. Words are wonderful things. Because some of them have a real impact. But, you know, I mean, you just look at that example of Hillary Clinton, where every economist in the world both told her and McCain that the idea of a tax holiday was just frickin' stupid. The loss of tax revenue couldn't be recovered. And it's minuscule in comparison to the total cost of gasoline. So it was a no-goer. So economists, people who professionally look at these things and understand numbers better than you, me, or anybody, all of them. It wasn't split opinion. It was like everybody said, sorry, this is pandering, this is crap. It won't go. So Hillary Clinton, not just John McCain, but Hillary Clinton, pulls the elitist line. So if she's willing to do that there, why do you have any expectation that they're going to act any differently when it comes to education, the war, the environment? And this probably is directly affecting the environmental debate in this country. If we have 10 times more people in the United States than any other nation that believe in a literal translation of a book written by men that they think was written by a god, no amount of science, reason, or facts is going to get through to these people. So what do we do? What do we do? I don't have the answer. I think the only answer that I have is that we have to start becoming honest with ourselves. And I mean, this is one of those things that we get hammered for. You hate America. You just complain about America. It's like, no! I love my damn country, but they're fucking up! And if I don't tell it that I think they're fucking up, I'm not being a good citizen, am I? And the answer to that is no. Now, I've only touched on a bit of this article, and I really, 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 really suggest you read this article and send it to everyone you know. Because I really think it lays out a framework for why we seem to be, you know, we get into these debates on, you know, across the political divide, and we get nowhere. And why do we get nowhere? Because we have a huge amount of the population that cannot separate fact from fiction, from myth, and no amount of facts, research, or proof will make these people change their minds. And I guess these are the people that Bob Kincaid always talks about how he's really, really scared shitless of. And I just hope that enough of the rest of us that actually, you know, I'm not a mental giant. But I'm a guy with a clue. I'm a guy that likes to, you know, find things out. And I'm also a guy where if I'm given information that proves an opinion that I have is incorrect, I have the ability to change that opinion on new knowledge. So with that, we're going to wrap it up. And Burning Spear tomorrow. That is awesome stuff. Thank you so much for that, David. I know Gail probably did a little happy dance at her desk at work because she's a particular fan of Burning Spear. And, you know, I appreciate that. Thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing today. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch for everything that they do for supporting the horn. If you haven't yet, please go to Coal River Wind and sign the petition. Join in on this movement that seems to be finally getting some, you know, some wind behind it. Ha ha ha. Excuse the pun. And thanks to Scott Berry at B1 Louder Productions for the music. Thanks to Ben Birch at the White Rose Society for everything that he does for this network. We would not be here if he didn't do what he does. And, you know, folks, I know it was a scream fest today, but you know what? I haven't really been able to do this as regularly as I like to, and I just had to go for bear tonight. So we'll see you tomorrow, folks. As we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
And the sign said, long-haired, freaky people need not apply.